Welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk with Cal Beissner, who is with the Cornwall Alliance, and we're going to talk about the subject of man-made climate change, or so-called man-made climate change, otherwise known as global warming. And there are some who say, well, we really need to help the poor, and by fighting climate change, then we're helping the poor. There are others who are saying, no. First of all, it's not even true, number one. But number two, if you really want to help the poor, then help them get developed. We're going to talk about this right now with Dr. Cal Beissner. And Cal, it's great to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Jerry, and it's good to be back with you. As you know, the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, which I lead, has just issued a petition that really takes the second position that you just described, and that is that really, for the sake of the poor, we need to not be fighting global warming. Instead, we need to be fighting poverty, because frankly, you know, even reasonably wealthy people, even people like the lower middle class in America, can thrive in any climate, from the Arctic Circle to the Sahara Desert. But very, very poor people can't thrive even in the greatest tropical paradise. And so poverty is a far greater risk to humanity than is any climate change. And so if we spend trillions of dollars trying to reduce man-made global warming, that money can't be spent to address far more serious problems for the poor, like hunger, sanitation, pure drinking water, disease, and things of that sort.
All right, and let's start with the premise itself. I mean, is it correct that man is actually causing global warming, that man is causing climate change?
Well, you know, the fact that carbon dioxide, which we emit when we burn fossil fuels in order to make energy, whether it's electricity from coal and natural gas or transportation energy from oil, it's a fact that carbon dioxide is what we call a greenhouse gas. It absorbs some heat radiation as it's moving from the surface of the Earth out toward space, and it re-radiates that out, and some of it comes back down toward the surface. So at least in theory anyway, it ought to be pretty clear that as we add more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, you're going to get a little bit more warming. The question is how much. And on that question, there have been, for about the last 25, 30 years, a number of people, many associated with the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who said that you get a whole lot more warming from adding CO2 to the atmosphere. That's a plausible theory, and that theory has been essentially programmed into the climate models that, you know, computer climate models that the IPCC uses. But the key to science is you test your theories by real-world observation. And what we see when we compare the output, the predictions based on those models, with reality is this. On average, the models predict about twice as much warming as actually has been observed over the relevant period. Over 95% of the models predict more warming instead of less warming than is observed, and that indicates that the errors are not random, but are driven by some kind of bias written into the models. And finally, none of the models predicted the complete absence of statistically significant global warming over the last 18 years and 8 months, according to the satellite records, which are the most reliable that we have. So, in essence, the models are wrong. CO2's warming effect is much, much smaller than what the IPCC has said, probably in the range of, perhaps half a degree to 1 degree Celsius for every doubling of CO2. And we haven't come close to doubling it yet. We've raised it by about 40% since the Industrial Revolution. We won't double it until near the end of this century. Instead of getting about 3 degrees Celsius of warming for every doubling of CO2, as the IPCC says.
Okay, you're going to have to translate this into English. But let me start with this. It's my understanding that since 1997, the temperature readings have actually shown the Earth getting cooler, not warmer, and yet we've had all this hype, and we continue to get this hype about global warming.
Yeah. Actually, it depends on which database you're looking at. We get data from satellites, we get data from, you know, land surface measures, from ocean going vessels and various things. And different ones of those databases will give you slightly different answers. What we do know for, I think, very, very sure, and this is because of the satellite data being the most reliable, is that there's been no upward trend in global average temperature since January of 1997. There does appear to have been some slight cooling trend since probably about 2002. But again, it'll differ depending on what database you look at. But the fundamental point is this. The computer models, which are the only reason to fear dangerous man-made global warming, have proven wrong because they are contradicted by real-world observation. That means there's no reason to fear. There's no reason for any predictions about future temperature. And if there's no reason for any predictions about future temperature, then there's also no reason for any policy whatsoever to try to control future temperature.
What about the hockey stick graph?
You're referring to a graph that purported to show that for a period of over 1,000 years, global average temperature was pretty stable, very, very slight fluctuations up and down, but not much. And then suddenly, in the late 19th century and accelerating in the 20th century...
Okay, that would be around the time of the Industrial Revolution then, right?
Yeah, right. Once the Industrial Revolution had spread beyond just simply Britain and,
right.
and the United States, the Industrial Revolution had apparently caused this sudden upswing in global average temperatures. The problem with the hockey stick graph is that it has been completely discredited. It was based on very unrepresentative data from tree rings, and then the data themselves were improperly handled using a statistical technique that, frankly, would have found a hockey stick shape in random numbers fed into the appropriate computer program. So that had a very featured role in the 2001 UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Assessment Report. It appeared in the summary for policymakers and then several times in the major report.
And in Al Gore's Oscar.
All over the world and in Al Gore's film, Inconvenient Truth. And then once it was thoroughly discredited, it suddenly disappeared from all of those
But Cal, let's be honest. I mean, unfortunately, the impact is still out there. The Oscar or the Academy Awards or whatever didn't say, hey, Al, we want our Oscar back. Your movie's bogus. You know, and it's unfortunate,
right.
But it seems like all the propaganda is on the other side. In fact, there are scientists supposedly or some politicians that want to throw people like you in jail or whatever. They want to, strip meteorologists of their degree if they don't agree with global warming or climate change, man-made.
Yeah, Jerry, Mark Twain once said that a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth gets its boots on.
Yeah.
And that really seems to have happened with the hockey stick graph. Many, many people still believe that that is a true depiction of reality. It's not. We had the medieval warm period from around 950 or 900 BC, AD rather, to around 1200, and then we had the Little Ice Age from around 1350 to around 1850. And we've not had warmer periods in the recent past than we had in the medieval warm period. So, yeah, and then what happens, of course, is that when the data don't agree with your theory, but you're committed to it for ideological reasons, well, you stop debating and you try to silence your critics, and that's what Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island is trying to do. He wants us to use the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act
RICO.
To prosecute people who argue against dangerous man-made global warming. Jerry, maybe you and I would wind up sharing a prison cell.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, that's like the Star Chamber. That's like medieval tortures or whatever, for people who are heretics or something like
that. Well, and it's not just, we don't have to go that far in history. In the Soviet Union,
Lubyanka.
Stalin embraced the ideas of Trofim Lysenko, who was a biologist who said that variations in species occur by acquired characteristics over time. You chop off somebody's arm, and then you chop off that person's child's arm, and that person's child's arm, and that person's child arm, and eventually you'll have somebody born without the arm. And that, of course, is total nonsense, but Trofim Lysenko thought that, and Stalin embraced it, and so it became an official part of Soviet doctrine. And geneticists who argued instead for a proper understanding of genetic control of characteristics wound up being arrested. They were subjected to extreme torture, to psychological manipulation. They were imprisoned for long periods of time. Many of them were killed for that. Well, you know, that's what happens when you turn these what ought to be intellectual debates into political issues, which is what's happened with the global warming cause. And that's why the other side is moving in that direction. One would think that they might consult the First Amendment to the Constitution, which speaks of freedom of the press and freedom of speech. There's something quite un-American about this.
All right. Now, Cal, everything you've said in this discussion, for the most part, except for maybe some comments about the poor, could have been said by, let's say, a conservative climatologist. But bring in a biblical perspective. Bring in Jesus Christ and the scriptures into this discussion, because I think that's important too.
And that is the most important to me. You know, for one thing, the scriptures themselves are the basis of science. The Apostle Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, test all things, hold fast what is good. And that really is the key to science. So science itself rests on a biblical worldview. We believe that a rational God created an ordered universe to be understood by rational people made in his image. That's the heart of science, and so that itself is a biblical matter. But in addition, we can also think this way. Since we believe that this rational God created an ordered universe, we ought to infer that he made the world in a way that is going to be robust, resilient, self-correcting, rather than extremely fragile and prone to catastrophic collapse in response to small stimuli. Well, that understanding would bring directly into question the notion that a tiny little change in atmospheric chemistry, carbon dioxide going from 0.028% to 0.056%, is going to cause catastrophe. And then in addition, the scriptures, of course, teach us that we must, as Paul put it in Galatians 2:10, remember the poor, the very thing that Paul said he was committed to doing. The poor people are the most vulnerable to any kind of problem. And so if we want to see them become less vulnerable, if we want to see them suffer less, we want to see them become not poor. But the policies being promoted to mitigate, to reduce global warming, all require depriving people of access to abundant, affordable, reliable energy, especially in the form of electricity, which for now and in the foreseeable future, fossil fuels are far and away the best source for that. And if we're going to try to reduce global warming by reducing our use of fossil fuels, we are going to condemn the poor in this world to more generations of poverty and the high rates of disease and premature death that invariably accompany poverty. And even in the developed world, we're going to push many people who are just on the upside from poverty back down into poverty. And in some cases, that's going to lead literally to death. In Great Britain, they have seen the rise of a phenomenon that they call fuel poverty, which is a situation where a household has to spend more than 10% of its income just simply on home heating. When that happens, a lot of people can no longer afford both the home heating and the food that they need. And over the last several winters, about five winters in a row, the number of excess premature winter deaths, which are a normal thing because of cold kills people, the number of those has more than doubled. And it's
even in a first world country,
country like Great Britain, roughly 40% of excess premature winter deaths in Great Britain over the last 5 years or so can be attributed solely to the fact that Britain adopted a policy of trying to reduce fossil fuel use for energy and replace it with wind.
Wow, on all based on questionable data. Well, we're basically out of time. I could ask this last question. I will have you go ahead and give the website and any kind of promotional thing, and then I've got a 20-second question for you.
Sure. Yeah. The Cornwall Alliance has started a petition to persuade public officials not to fight global warming by trying to reduce fossil fuel use, but instead to promote economic development for the poor. So people can find that if they go to cornwallalliance.org and just look for our petition there.
All right, 15-second question. I'm sure you can do it. Who controls the funding? Isn't that the whole key? That's why there's so much of this emphasis on fighting global warming, because of the funding of the research.
Well, you know, first off, you don't rest everything on that, because people need to think independently. But second, whereas a few million dollars a year might go to scientists who are questioning the global warming alarmist message, over $1 billion a day gets spent on climate research related to promoting the global warming message by governments around the world. If the funding is a problem, it's far more a problem on that side than on the other side.
Exactly. CornwallAlliance.org for more information. Cal Beissner, always a pleasure. God bless you, sir.
Jerry, thank you. God
thank
bless you.
You,
too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.